I used to love my morning coffee until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it just wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Now I get my morning ritual without the crash or the discomfort. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, you could win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Wastelanders and Vault Dwellers, welcome back to the Fallout Lorecast. You got me and John talking episode 6, The Trap, of season 1 of the Fallout TV show. John, welcome back again. I'm excited to talk about this one because we get to see a lot more Cooper Howard back pre-Great War stuff going on in this episode.
We also get Chris Parnell. So
yeah,
a personal fan of someone who watched a lot of Archer.
There you go. Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, let's get into it. We don't have any new things to talk about at the beginning of this episode, so let's just dive right in. Galaxy News broadcast from Cooper Howard. He's advertising the vaults, right?
Yes.
We get this line, not made by God Almighty, but the working man, which, oh man, this feels kind of Bioshocky. Does it not?
Ooh, yeah, you're right. There's an element of like
no gods, no kings. Yeah.
Well, I like your thought process there, because what I think we're getting towards is this idea of that actually is what Vault Tech really is. Vault Tech doesn't, but in a messed up way, actually, just like Bioshock. Vault Tech, no kings, no gods, because we are them.
Right.
That's right. It's all man. Not actually. Right. Yeah, this is not an actual, like, you know, ni Dieu ni Matre. This is a full-blown, hey, those guys are fake, but I'm not. And then we're really starting to set up the evil that is. This is probably the episode that most covers the evil that is Vault Tech.
Yes. So we get introduced to Bud. We also get this line about thick lead casing keeps out rads and the reds, you know, that kind of thing. Yep. Bud is introduced. He's from, he used to work at West Tech. So now we can start to see this association between these companies and the people who seem to be moving kind of fluidly between them, which is interesting. We have this comment about the armor, the design flaws in the armor. Cooper claims that cost lives. Of course, West Tech made the armor, and so now he's got issues with him simply because he was on the front lines and saw that their technology wasn't as good as they said it was because capitalism or whatever.
Yeah. Well, the whole concept was that the guy didn't really care. That's what really kind of sets you up this guy came from
aloof.
West Tech.
Right.
So West Tech made power armor, and the power armor would effectively seize up while they were in combat and leave you just standing there. And so the Reds would just kill people. And to it, Howard's point, we almost lost Alaska because of this power armor. And the guy just is like, yeah, I really was never big into quality control. That's not my interest.
Right.
Which is, and now he's overseeing Vault Tech, which means, hey, these are the vaults that are meant to keep everyone safe in a post-apocalyptic world. Uh-huh. And one of the people in charge of that isn't really a big QC person.
Right. That's a great point, because that is one of the problems with the vaults. You know, oh, the water chip broke or whatever. And now we got to go out in the wasteland and fix it. The things never seem to last as long as you expect them to. Things fall apart. All of that. Mm-hmm. Which is ironic because his line is time is the ultimate weapon, which is the exact same thing that tears apart quality control. With given enough time, things fall apart because you didn't make them well enough. Like, it's almost as if his lack of interest in quality control makes him more interested in the effects of time in order to beat people he doesn't like.
Exactly. Well, it's because what he's trying to get at is that we can always, if we just outlast our competition,
right,
that's all we really have to do.
Right.
And It's odd because what I will say is that, and maybe I'm wrong here, who's Vault-Tec's competition?
Well, they are primarily run by people who have interests in American companies and American government. So their competition is going to be international and resources and those kinds of things. But there's that underlying feeling of, we are the superior ones who know better. Our competition is kind of our customers.
Exactly.
It's the people that we are fooling into using our products. There's like that double-sided like thing going on. Like, okay, who is the, that's a good question to ask because it kind of implies both.
And because it's that piece of like, there's a lot of, we have to do this, we have to do this. And it's like, why? But that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there were other people dabbling with like end of the world resources that would help people survive, but nobody to the extent that Vault-Tec was. So you could say, well, their competition in the space of, you know, like surviving the end of days or whatever, but that's not really what he's getting at probably.
Yeah.
Then we find out that Barb set up a wrap up party at their house without telling Cooper. This shows, this is the first glimpse that, I mean, maybe second glimpse. She sets up the interview with him to work for Vault-Tec, you know, as their, I don't know, promotions guy or whatever. So we see that she's capable. She has connections. She's able to set things up. But the fact that she does this without him knowing and just tells him after the fact shows that in some ways she's way more in control and also less worried about getting, not even just getting his approval, but just bringing him in on things. You know, like, you're a married guy. Yeah. Would you set up a party at your house without telling your wife, hey, I'm going to have people over this weekend?
I would if I thought it was going to keep my wife and child from dying in the nuclear apocalypse that's coming up. And we get more information on this later when they're, you know, post-party, when they're sitting in the hot tub together and she makes that admission to him, which we can get to in a bit. But that's where, like, because that becomes... That becomes the whole theme, I think, of this season. We get a lot of culmination next couple episodes, but it is this piece of, pardon me. It's this piece of, is Barb good or is Barb evil? Because Howard, we see him at this point being, all right, he's a good guy. He has a great moral compass, especially in this episode. You just have to really understand who he is as a person.
Well, he's genuinely struggling with trying to figure out what the best thing to do is. Yeah.
Right. And whereas his wife seems to be very, very direct in her motivations. Mm-hmm. And we get a reveal that we'll cover in later episodes that it's because she knew truth that he didn't.
Right. Right.
Had he, and the whole question is, had he known those truths, would he have gone along? And so she was trying to basically preserve her husband's innocence, for lack of a better phrase, while also not exposing her family to risk.
Yeah. So there's something that's really interesting about Barb that plays through the rest of this season. And it's that the question of, is she really doing this for her family and for Cooper and for herself, because she realizes that the options are limited. She's in a rock and a hard place and she just has to pick the best result. Or is there some actual selfish, evil kind of motivation lying underneath that we haven't discovered about her yet? Because she doesn't show up in that many scenes. And maybe there's other motivation going on. So there's that becomes the question. And what's so cool about all of these scenes with her is that it kind of toes the line and doesn't, the scenes want to tell us that, oh, she's looking out for her best interest, but then we're still suspicious. So which one is it? And we never really seem to get the definitive answer on that.
I think we will in season two. That's my viewpoint because of how season one ended. And I don't want to give too much stuff up because we're getting there, but
we'll get to those episodes.
That's going
to
be I think we'll talk more about that at the end of episode 8 of like, this was Barb's purpose. This was what Barb was trying to achieve.
Right. So I think we'll see more about that too. I agree. So we go to the house party. There's this line where the dog can't come into enemy territory. Cooper's keeping the dog safe from the enemy territory, which is all of these people in his house. He doesn't want to be here, which is, again, a double entendre for Vault-Tec is the enemy, or I just want people to leave me alone. Can they just go home? I don't really want to be at the party. But it also establishes that Cooper likes dogs. He actually cares about dogs, right? Even, you know, like we've seen glimpses of that as him as the ghoul. This is where that comes from. We also get negotiations in Alaska. The guy on the couch mentions this, like, some of the news that's going on with the conflict and the negotiations with,
which is a great thing, because that's how a lot of the fallouts are. I mean, even like going back to the text versions of Fallouts, your ones and your twos, but even your threes and your fours, it's the background stuff. Like, in Fallout 4, when you're getting ready with your wife or husband, whichever, you know, or gender you played, the news is going on in the background. People are having a conversation. If you can, when you uncover the discs, I forget what they're called off the top of my head, in Fallout 2, it would give you some like backstory as to stuff that was going on before. It's that nice, like, I don't know, I love this stuff in games when you discover something that gives you some history. Wait, what's really going on?
Yeah.
Oh, well, actually, up in Alaska. Yeah.
Yeah, these little kernels of a little bit of lore kernels that just kind of fall in there. That's why we have this show. It's because somebody has to stitch all the stuff together.
Right.
So, and then we go outside and we have these server ladies talking to Sebastian. This is Cooper's friend. He's the voice of Mr. Handy in the show. Not the same guy who does Mr. Handy in the games, but in the show it is. And he's the one friend who showed up. I love that Cooper only had was able to get one friend show up. They talk about communism sweeping Hollywood. They hint at the world being run by people behind Vault Tech. So this is another one of those glimpses, especially for people who have played the games. Like, hey, something's nefarious going on with Vault Tech. He drops the info that Robco bought the studio that the other friend of theirs was working at. So now we can start to see this like corporatization of the world, which is happening in our world. I mean, how many companies are actually making products that go on the shelves in your grocery store? Like, they're all owned by like three of them or something like that. Who's making actual content on media services? I think there's like three or four major companies and that's it anymore. So we're seeing that in this universe. And then the quote here, the end of the world is a product.
Yes.
That says so much. That says so much in just one line. This idea that on the surface, it's like, well, Vault Tech is establishing themselves as creating products for people who are worried about the end of the world. But when you turn that around, if that's your product, then you're going to do everything you can in order to sell more of your solution, which could be nefarious.
Yeah, I'll be honest. You skipped over one of my favorite parts of this whole scene.
Oh, go for it. Yeah,
where he talks about he voiced Mr. Handy, and the Howard says to him, "Well, how much did they pay? Like $10 million?" He goes, "No, $160,000." But they gave me a robot. And he goes, and you never you don't realize how annoying it is to walk into your own home and be greeted by your own voice every day.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's great. Also, in the world of Fallout,
great.
Yeah, in the world of Fallout, $160,000 is like nothing. It is the money, the inflation has skyrocketed, and that's like barely anything, which is kind of hilarious. Okay, let's move on to the future. This transitions to the ghoul waking up to Rangers. They're smack him due to his illegal actions, taking over the business, right? He's waking up from that scene where he took all the drugs and passed out or whatever.
All the drugs.
Yeah. And so that's just a quick little glimpse of a scene. Then we get to Vault 4 with Lucy and Max. And the medics fix Max's arm. They pull out a human tooth. Out of his arm,
which is really a really cool moment of like, because when you make pipe guns in the game. That's why I liked it. There was a little homage to when you would make you had the ability to make your own rifles at one point in the game,
right? Yeah And you still do that in Fallout 4 and 76. This idea that like you would fill them with human teeth and shoot the teeth at people because ammunition's hard to come by. So Vault 4 finds his armor. They have surface foragers. This is our first glimpse at like, oh, this vault works differently than Vault 33 did. Surface foragers. Vault 33 would never have surface foragers. What is going on there? Vault 4, the woman who's talking to her, this leader lady, she's not the overseer, but she seems in charge of certain things. I don't remember specifically if they gave her a title. But she says that her mother was a courier, which is a nice New Vegas reference because we get couriers in New Vegas, right? Which is interesting. It also implies a lot, which we find out later, that many of these people came from the surface, which is completely antithetical to Vault 33 and Lucy's experience with being in a vault. So now it's it's a wonderful, like you keep on saying, season one is an introduction. It is like the steps down into the pool for people who have never swum in the pool before. Swam in the pool? I don't know language. Words are hard. But
right.
This idea that like we see one version of a vault, now we're going to see basically an opposite to that. This one keeps everyone out. This one brings people in. Opposites.
Exactly. I'm trying to think, there was a vault like that though. Wasn't there one in one of the games where it got resettled? Where you went to one of the vaults and the people inside it had, they weren't the original inhabitants.
There are a few. There are, I don't remember all of them off the top of my head, but there.
Yes.
One of them had raiders in it. There was.
Yeah, I wasn't getting raiders, but there was one that actually, it was a functioning society inside of it. Mm-hmm. I want to go Vegas. I want to say it's New Vegas, but it may have been Fallout 3. It's not 4, but it would have been New Vegas or 3 where you went to and the people inside the vault had actually occupied the vault. Like it's also technically in Fallout 1. So Fallout 1, that's where you have to go rescue Tandy. So the right. time you go rescue Tandy, that's also, that's the very first one. But those are raiders. There was one where they moved in and they settled it. So that's kind of where this one reminded me of that. You had some original vault dwellers, which we learned later, but yeah.
Yeah, so see, it's kind of cool because if you haven't played the games, then this idea that like, oh, the vaults can be this diverse and different seems contradictory. We would want to assume that all vaults are made the same, but now we're getting a glimpse that like, not only are Vault 33, 32, and 31 seemingly different because we get hints of that through Norm's storyline, but Vault 4 is very different. This is significantly a different kind of thing, and we're going to see where that goes, right? So Lucy and Max are now bored. There's a song that plays this theme from A Summer Place by Percy Faith. And this is the like, hey, you smell good. You want to have sex? Maximus doesn't understand biology. And I know people in the response to this season coming out initially were like, that's ridiculous. Maximus can't be that dumb. But I think if you think about how young he was when he was saved, and then the fact that he has surrounded himself by a bunch of other people, and on top of it, is not particularly smart, never really had parents, never really had a relationship. By the time he was part of the Brotherhood, they all just beat him up, so he didn't get close to anyone. He didn't really talk to very much of anybody. He might just be that naive. I mean, it's not likely, but it seems possible.
Yeah, I think the idea is it real? No. Is it a good homage to kind of exactly all the things you just said? Yes. That's how I look at it more. I look at it more as we're trying to show that he is this just kind of unknowing dolt for whom all of information has been held from. He only has been given the information deemed, I was about to say the word most, the phrase most critical. That's incorrect.
Right.
Deemed most valuable to the people above him knowing.
Right.
That's all it is.
Right.
So whatever we can make you do, we're going to make you not search for women, not search for money, not search for anything. Your job is to serve.
Right. Right. Yeah. And we don't need our the people living in our barracks having babies. So we're probably going to implant false understandings about how any of that stuff works so that people just don't do things. Right. So that totally tracks. I think that's a good perspective on that. Then we get to Maximus and Lucy eating. Maximus thinks they're trying to trap them. So he's the first one to get suspicious here.
Yes.
It's not Lucy, even though this vault seems very different from anything Lucy's experienced. He's the first one whose antennas go up and go, I don't trust this. Something's going on, which leads me to believe that even though he's not the smartest guy in the room, he has certain instincts that have kept him alive.
He's, I think a great term for him is survivalist.
Yes.
That's what he is. He is not in like the I'm going to build a bunker under my house style, but in like the actual, like he is a good at surviving. And that's actually been his theme the whole way through.
Right.
Everything that's occurred to him, he's just keeps surviving. So he knows something's off here. Now he's about to get tempted the other way, which is hilarious.
Right, right. We get the swing the other way. I mean, this is a typical storytelling thing. You push things so far in one direction that the audience goes, oh, well, that's definitely where things are going to go. It'll never swing back to the opposite. And then you swing it back the opposite because that's just fun and like, it plays with character development and all
that. It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So Maximus in the previous episode talked about how everyone tries to save the world, but they disagree on how. He for being kind of not a smart guy, he's got some of the smartest perspectives and dialogue on this new watch through that I've noticed. For example, in this scene, he says, "This is a cult same as any." It's a very short line, but what he realizes here is that every, and what it reveals to us, maybe he even doesn't realize it, but to us as the audience, every group is a cult. Every vault is a cult because they're fed misinformation and they believe false things. The Brotherhood is a cult. The Enclave is a cult. Even the NCR, to some regard, is a cult. Any Raider faction is a cult. People who work for House are in a cult because they're all run by figureheads who feed people underneath them misinformation, whether purposely or unintentionally, that cause people to band underneath them. The entire world is full of cults. And Maximus somehow gets that. And that's genius for being kind of a dumb guy.
Well, that's, I mean, that's again, the whole thing is, this is where I think he starts to shift a little bit away from, this is like the sex scene we just talked about. It may be, and this is, I don't like the writing here, so I'm trying to give the writers a little bit of credit on him. Sure. I think they could have done this better, but I think what they were trying, I believe they're trying to achieve here is by saying Maximus is not an idiot. Maximus has just been fed no or poor information his entire life.
Right.
And is not aware that the people telling it to him were not actual, like, you know, godlike intelligences. He was looking up to
like a little kid. So as a little kid, you think your parents know everything. And then you become a teenager and you're like, oh, my parents know nothing. And then you become an adult and you go, my parents knew a lot, but they didn't know everything.
Exactly. Yeah. They were still wrong on some of those.
Right. They knew more than I give them credit for, but
exactly.
Yeah. I think that this plays to, and I think this is a problem with the English language. When we say somebody is dumb or somebody is not smart, there's a difference between being intelligent and being knowledgeable, right? Maximus is highly not knowledgeable. He is completely lacking of knowledge or given false knowledge, but it doesn't mean that he's not capable of being intelligent.
Yeah.
That is a different kind of thing. Just because you don't have facts and can't remember specific things doesn't mean you can't figure something out or put two and two together and make it equal four, right? Those are different things our brains do. So that is an interesting point. Then we get, let's see, we stay out of Vault 12, the whole, like, don't go to, or level 12 in Vault 4, don't go to level 12 because, well, obviously we all stay away from level 12. And of course that makes us in the audience and also Lucy and Maximus go, what's going on in level 12?
Which, by the way, I mean, I'm going to give it away. I'm not going to give it a whole thing, but it's a great reveal what actually was going on in level 12.
Yes.
It is a fantastic, like, yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the fun of Vault 4. So the Overseer has one eye. First insight into mutations.
It's Chris Parnell.
Yes.
So first off, anytime you put Chris Parnell in stuff, I'm excited. I love Rick and Morty.
Nope, it says Goosey. Archer. Goosey is your name.
He is fantastic. Oh, Dr. Leo Spaceman in 30 Rock. Chris Parnell has been a reliable source of comedy for me for most of my adult life. Uh-huh. So anytime he's in something, I'm thrilled. Yeah, and he, because he plays this character, I think, magnificently.
Yeah.
He is the overseer of the vault. He's not particularly smart. He's not particularly strong. Whereas the overseers we had back in Vault 33,
right,
were, you know, because they all came from Vault 31, were
right,
very intelligent, very knowledgeable. Capable. These were true leaders where you were kind of like, oh, they know stuff I don't. Now we've got Chris Parnell.
Right.
Whatever.
Again, a contrast. A contrast showing, like, not all vault overseers are the same. This guy clearly is something different. And on top of that, he's a mutant, which, as we learn later, would not be part of Vault Tech or the Enclave.
Oh, yeah.
They would not have a mutant running a vault if they were in charge. So this vault is not being run by them. Also, this gives us insight into mutations other than ghouls. And I think this is important because there's the base assumption is, if you're a human being and you get mutated in the wasteland, well, maybe you turn into a ghoul. And in the series so far, we've seen ghouls. We've seen ghoulification. We have some sense of what goes on, what's going on with the ghoul and people he knows and all of that stuff. But in this scene, we go, oh, mutations don't have to be ghouls. They can be other right. things. And this makes me think of Thaddeus in the trailer showing the little mouth growing on his, like on his neck, on his, between his neck and his shoulder. Right. Like he's turning into something. Now, is that like a Snallygaster or is that like, I mean, it's not a plant growing out of his head, but it's not a super mutant and it doesn't seem to be a ghoul. It's something else.
Mm-hmm.
So this establishes that that is a possibility at this point in the story before we even get to season two and whatever's happening with Thaddeus, which I thought was smart to include this here so that that doesn't feel like it just comes out of left field later.
Yeah, I was trying to think. That it's funny now you mentioned I spent so much time in war. It's funny that you mentioned it. I spend so much time in Warhammer that I'm used to abhumans that I totally forgot that's actually not a thing in Fallout, is it? Like you don't get people who are, you get some random mutations. Well, you did get,
well, there are some people who mutate themselves on purpose. That does happen.
Well, and that's what I think may have been going on in Vault 4.
Yeah,
that may have been some. John, not just
John's coming down with a cold, guys, and I feel bad for
sorry,
him.
Guys. He's suffering I'm coming through in this. And out of stuff, but you'll hear my voice is wrecking out on occasion. So I'm my energy level's there. My
he's doing the best he can.
Vocal cords and face are not. But anyway, so my thought process around this was like, I think we get more into Vault 4 later in the episode. I think a lot of the mutations we see in Vault 4 aren't necessarily environmental mutations, mm-hmm. is what I'm getting at.
Right.
I think they're because to your point,
right.
I'm used to Warhammer. In Warhammer, we have them called an abhuman. So the idea is in a galaxy-wide space with lots of radiation and cloning and all this stuff, you get some variations that mm-hmm. are pretty
different kinds
extreme
of planets where people need to survive in different ways, and so they purposely change themselves or whatever, or have over
exactly.
generations because it's 40,000 years in the future. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas in Fallout, and I think we're gonna get more of this, we'll get later in this episode, it's much more of a intentional thing done to them,
right? So. Whether pre-war by experimentation in order to try to make super mutants, or post-war in certain vaults that were experimenting in certain things, or by crazy individuals who are, you know, the master or whoever is doing exactly. whatever in order to experiment on people, or there's just the randomness of the wasteland, and that's a piece of it. But mm-hmm. you're right, most of the time it's something that was probably established somewhere and may not be right. doing what it was originally doing, but is still functioning in a way, or might still be doing what it's supposed to be doing. So here, we go to the ghoul. He's remembering the past, he and Barb are in the hot tub, and mm-hmm. he mentions this line. He thinks about going back to be a real cowboy again, you know, to leave, go, you know, find a piece of land somewhere. That's it. This gives us this tiny little insight.
Oh.
He came from that life. He wasn't, he wasn't a Hollywood, you know, rich guy who grew up, who's, you know, like parents were actors. And so now he's an actor or anything like that. He came from nothing. He knew growing up what it meant to survive on the farm, to take care of yourself and, you know, your livestock or whatever, and also served in the military. It shows that he is even way more capable than we initially thought. He's not just a comfy kind of guy, you know?
Well, yeah, and I think that this scene, this is one of the most important scenes in the show, I think, because this is the one where it does that shift over, where he makes the comment to his wife of like, look, we can go back being there. We don't need this. You know, we've got enough money.
Yeah.
And she says, well, no, we need to secure ourselves a space in the vault.
Right, right. And, which really implies that she knows the time is limited.
Yeah. And so, but then his response is, we have money, we'll just buy one. You don't have to do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then she drops, and the cinematography here is great.
Yeah.
She drops the not a good one.
Yes.
And he goes, well, what do you mean? And right. she just gives him that look of, I can't say another word.
Right. Yes.
And that is like to every, I mean, I remember watching that. I'm on the couch. My wife's watching it. My wife's never played a minute of Fallout in her life. Mm-hmm. And she kind of looks at me, and I'm like losing my mind. Like,
she's, yes! yeah, she's
and,
yeah, yeah.
And my wife's looking at me going, like, what? Like, as he goes, what? So I had to pause it and explain to right. her, oh, actually, these people are all horrible.
Well, think about the vaults, that we've even found out just in the show. If you've only seen Vault 33, 32, and 4, are those the good ones? They don't seem to be. They seem safe, but they don't necessarily seem like the good ones.
And then we see a lot more after this scene, and we'll get to it in a little bit. We see a lot more of what was really going on in Vault 4.
Yes.
And so I think that's why I like this episode of luck. It basically doubles down on the, all right, we're gonna give you a huge reveal, and then we're gonna double, triple down on that reveal to make you really understand why this reveal is so important.
Right. And so this scene sets all of that up, but it also it also raises the question. We know, having seen the scene before and seen trailers, that Cooper has said, both in the trailers and in season one, that his motivation is he's looking for his family.
Yep.
But it raises the question, if Barb knew when the bombs would drop, why did Cooper have the daughter at the birthday party? Why wasn't the daughter with Barb? Or why wasn't Cooper and Barb, or Cooper and the daughter with Barb, getting ready to get in a vault because she knew what was about to happen?
Yeah, something happened. We'll discover that.
Yeah, and there, it raises the question. And then it also makes me go, when the ghoul says, I'm looking for my family, does he mean both of them, or does he mean just his daughter? Does he mean just her? We don't really know, right? Yep. So, and how did they get lost? You know, like, what is going, did they end up in a good vault and he just didn't come in? Like, what is going on with that? So, and how fast can a horse go, and how far away was the vault they're supposed to go to? I don't know.
Right.
But okay, so moving on, Cooper is at the bar with Charlie. He confronts him about these communist meetings, right? Charlie's his buddy. Charlie says, Vault Tech's the devil, flat out.
Yeah.
Vault Tech's the devil. Cooper's like, well, what do I know? I play a cowboy for a living, which is funny, foreshadowing, because he actually becomes a cowboy again in order to survive in the wasteland. Vault Tech has interest in making sure conflict doesn't go away. This doubles down on the idea that, like, the end of the world is a product. Then we have this quote, what happens when the cattle ranchers have more power than the sheriff? The whole town burns down. They're talking about a film that he was in. Yeah. And this is a warning about the dangers of capitalism or corporatism running awry and not being constrained by government, which feels, I don't know. We live in a reality where this, you go back and play Fallout 20 years ago and you're like, okay. You play it today and you're like, oh no, I'm starting to see more and more similarities in the real world. And then there's more cult talk. Maybe Cooper's in the cult of America, that sort of thing. Huge similarities here between the cult of America and the cult of a vault.
There's also the line where the guy's talking about, because he's Native American, talking about how, oh yeah, and you played an Indian. He goes, you played a real, and he said, they let me play an Indian effectively. And Cooper's response, like, a good one?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, you did a good job. But it is. And then when you really hear this, doubles down on the conversation earlier with the guy who played Mr. Handy, talking about, oh yeah, Vault Tech bought the studio. So and so is buying this. And what you're really getting into here, they're driving home, and you get more of this in kind of later episodes, is the narrative has been taken over, to what you're just saying. These corporations, they're not just running amok, they're in total control of everything.
Right.
And what's happening is we're just following along because there's nowhere to go for more truth.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Because also, I want to remind everyone that there's no hint that the internet exists in the Fallout universe.
Well, there are connected computers at a distance, but we don't have a sprawling internet sort of structure the way that we do here. Like today,
which makes sense because again, the show is meant to be an evolved version that never got past like that late, that mid 1950s style. Right.
The miniaturization of technology didn't really happen.
Yeah. I mean, I got left. I can have a Pip-Boy on my wrist,
right?
But all the TVs are tube TVs,
right? Well, the Pip-Boy's a little tube too, and it's the very cutting edge of technology. That's why it's able to exist. But
that's what I'm getting at. It's like that. Yeah. That's what makes it kind of the show fun. So this whole conversation that sets up some key stuff later is about the corporations are owning everything and they're running everything. And it's a really great little homage to, because we're driving there, how bad can Vault Tech really be?
Right.
And that's what Cooper is discovering. He's saying, well, how bad can this organization be? He just doesn't like the people that work there. He thinks they're just suits.
Right. Yeah, he's an actor who just doesn't get along with, you know, the corporate types and doesn't really, you know, want to deal with them. But he's starting to realize there's more going on.
Exactly. Yeah. Because he's a cowboy. I only like being around suits. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
But no, these these suits are evil. So
yeah, yeah. So then we get to the scene with him and Barb. The phone rings, and he tells the guy that she doesn't take calls in the evening, which shows that her work life is encroaching on their personal life. So that's a pain to him. And then where's Janie? She's reading Little House on the Prairie. This is interesting.
To the dog.
To the dog. Worries about no dogs in the vault. She knows they'll need to go there. That's what this is like.
Yeah.
Barb is like, she's at this mindset now where she's like, we will be in a vault. We are going to have to live in a vault. Cooper's now asking questions about who's in charge of Vault Tech decisions. Like, who makes the rules? Who decided that dogs aren't in the vault? All of that. This tells me that Cooper, and this is another one of those wonderful, I don't know, two-sided things. Cooper is going to be called a communist. They do it in episode one at the birthday party. He's a communist. Yes. He gets labeled as a communist because he is interested in freedom. He's not interested in communism. The system is so backwards that people who push back against the system get incorrectly labeled communists by the system to shut them up because they are fighting for freedom. They're freedom fighters. And that's where the lines are. And I love that contrast of like, he's asking who makes the rules because he is an American. He's a cowboy and he wants to be free in that very traditional sense. And yet eventually will be labeled a communist. Right. And Barb here is struggling with fear about Cooper being like in the past. We get a little bit of a glimpse of her life. When he went away to war, they were together. And that weighed on her. And she uses that as a justification to say that she's willing to give up some freedom in order to have to not worry about certain things. We get this quote, if billions of people are going to lose their lives, I will do what I can to make sure the people I love, you and Janie, aren't among them. Again, this doubles down on that feeling of like, she knows the inevitable is going to happen.
Yes.
This seems to be her motivation, or at least this is the motivation she's telling to Cooper. So the question I have here is Janie not just in, like, because she works for the company, one of the good vaults, but is she an overseer at a vault?
Well, I mean, Barb. You said Janie.
I mean Barb. Barb or Janie.
Yes.
Oh, both of them. Point.
Yeah.
Because Janie,
if they're
in a cryopod where they get released to run a vault every so often, like the people who lead Vault 33 and 32, then Janie could be older and could be managing a vault somewhere as a vault overseer because of her connections to her mother. All right, let's do a magic trick. I'm going to list out three different stocking stuffers that I found at Uncommon Goods, and you will magically, in your mind, see the perfect people to give these gifts to. The Greatest Chocolates of the World Exploratory Set. A mug warmer that looks like a cute cat. A do-it-yourself solar-powered robot kit. Okay, maybe that last one was for me. But it worked, right? You pictured exactly who you'd give these to. Well, that's because Uncommon Goods is different from the regular store. The holidays are almost here. It's time to start buying your gifts, and you should go look for the highest quality, unique, and often handmade in the US gifts you can't find anywhere else. They have something for everyone. Moms, dads, kids, friends, sports fans, foodies, people who really like puzzles, all sorts of people. And shopping at Uncommon Goods supports artists and small businesses. Plus, Uncommon Goods gives back $1 to a nonprofit partner of choice with every purchase, and they've donated over $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Make this holiday be the year that you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/falloutlore. That's uncommongoods.com/falloutlore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Yeah, it's very Vault 4. It's very Fallout 4-ish, but yeah, recuperate. Yeah,
him
to get there.
Yeah,
but
father.
Yeah, that, yeah. I think it's my expectation is they're going to have to. I mean, man, I'm just going to hedge a bet here. They're going to have to make a swing on her that Barb either went full evil or full good.
Right.
It's going to be one of those. It's one of those two. I don't think she's going to be middle ground, and it could even split, you know, like you said, you can have fun twists with, you know, the daughter being evil and blah, 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 blah. But I do think that both of them are obviously going to be around in season two as a kind of, what's the word for it? Like emotional stress on Cooper, where okay. he's going to have to discover
he gets
something.
Some that he sort of discovery discover. About them. Yeah. And I think the twist there would be like, let's say one or both of them are overseers or something, mm-hmm. but maybe they're stuck. Maybe they have no good choice.
Right.
And so they're not doing it because they're evil. They're doing it because this is my life now. I guess this is who I am.
Well, and that the question to that, your statement there of evil is Bonnie evil? You know, she's running Vault 33 now. She's right. from Vault. She means she's from
Betty?
Pre-war.
Betty? Yeah.
Betty. Sorry, Betty. Yeah. Sorry, Betty. She's from pre-war.
Right.
Is she
right.
evil? I mean, the people in Vault 33 are not suffering. They're not in danger. They're not being experimented
on. But they're also not being allowed to become in charge of themselves. They're also...
Yes, but that's what I'm saying. When I say evil, this is the problem.
They are not the ruling class.
Versus some of the other vaults where the overseers were evil. They were actually there to experiment on torture and do these things.
There's different levels of evil. Yeah. There's actively being evil and torturing and actual suffering. Yeah. But then there's like this passive, like it's the problem with feudalism, right? Like if you're a lord or a king or something like that, you're not going to give up your station because the rest of existence sucks. Like you're just not going to do it. But by doing that and having that attitude, it's kind of a passive evil because you also aren't sharing your power, you know? So you've That's got fair. Kind of that level to it also. This scene ends with Cooper saying, I know you always try to do the right thing. That's why what I love about you, which will, I think to your point, will either be reinforced and we'll go, no, she's always trying to do the right thing, or will show us that he was hoodwinked and she was fooling him from the beginning and he never really knew who she was. So it's going to be one or the other, but it's going to set us up for something, right? So back to Vault 4, Lucy and the Overseer are discussing how toilets work.
That was fun. Yes.
We have the Overseer is, we find out that he's five generations of a Vault Dweller.
Yep.
So this vault's been functional with other people for that long.
Mm-hmm. And this is a cool, this is what I'm saying. This is where there's a quick reveal here where he's saying that, oh, I'm five generations. And so what it's, you know, because she's looking at him saying, no, you're mutated. You have to be from the outside. Because they're also, she's walking, there were people there with glowing eyes, people there with scales.
The extra nose guy. Yeah.
Yeah, the extra nose guy. And what's happening is, and I'm going to jump the shark on us a little bit here just because I need to do it. Lucy's perspective is that these people all came from the wasteland. And they were brought in and they are mutants. But, you know, I'm just going Chris Parnell, that's who it is. He's saying, no, I'm fifth generation. And he even had that fun like slur for people born above. That was with his terrible joke.
Right. He's still 100% Vault Tech, but he's not what she expected.
Exactly. And so what you then discover is actually all the normals, because this goes into the woman, Birdie, who was a Shady Sand survivor. She looks like a normal person. In fact, all the people in the vault, or the majority of people in the vault who look normal, actually come from outside.
Right.
And this is a key part of vault techs and vaults and all that stuff. So of course the people inside are like, what? We all look like this. We're all weirdly mutated. Why are you like that? But the reality of the matter is that
sometimes the vaults are not as good as it was outside, which is sometimes the case. This is her first realization that like not all vaults really work the same way. And she gets kicked out. Like he just kicks her right out. Then Maximus finds the power armor. We'll kind of move through some of these quick bits. He figures out where the fusion core is. Birdie finds him touching the fusion core. This is when she tempts him with like the warm shower. What is a hot shower? He says,
What is a hot shower?
Yeah. And then that scene is full of these people who are way too happy, like uncomfortably happy. Like that doesn't happen. What is going on? Then we go to his room and you have, of course, little glimpses of all sorts of things, right? The record player, the clean water, but then sugar bombs and yum, yum deviled eggs and Blamco mac and cheese and all of the things that you find in Fallout games. And the song that's playing is Give Me the Simple Life by June Christie, which again, very poignant for the scene. Any thoughts on this one?
So this was, again, that whole piece of he wants to leave. They want to trap him here. And that moment of, wait, I think I want to be trapped here.
Right.
This is awesome.
Right.
It is, because the truth is, this is where what we've been discussing, the thing about the vaults. That's why I was just saying Vault 33. Yes, they're trapped there. but they are safe.
Right.
They have food. Well, now they lost their water chips. That's a problem.
But sure. You
know, they have food.
Generally, they have food.
Water.
They have hot
for the,
water.
Except yeah. for, the, you know, they shouldn't really have raiders. Mistakes happen. You know, but it becomes this idea of it's even beyond safety. It's also like comfort.
But it plays into what Barb was talking about is the willingness mm-hmm. to give up freedom for safety, which is a constant mm-hmm. balance. How much freedom, how much safety? If you have too much freedom, people can do whatever they want. You're not safe. If you have too much safety, mm-hmm. you have no freedom. You can't do what you want. There's got to be a balance between the two. And just like everything in this show, everything is askew. Every ideology, every individual, every perspective on the world is too far in one direction or another. That's why everything feels out of balance.
Yeah. And this is, again, another homage to Fallout 3, where you have that piece of like everyone wants out of the vault and everyone, mm-hmm. and, you know, and that vault had been opened before and they reclosed it.
Yeah.
You know, because they said, no, it's terrible out there.
Right.
Don't go out there. It's awful. And so they lied to everybody. But people growing up in Fallout in Vault, was it Vault 3?
101 in Fallout 3?
Fallout 3 is in Vault 101. Those who grew up in Vault 101, they all want to leave. They're not realizing it's actually way better inside than outside.
Right, right.
In fact, it's as the Wanderer,
you don't give me the freedom, so I want to take the freedom. Yeah.
Do not leave this vault. Right. You will, like, it is horrible out there. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's that conundrum. Then we get to Lucy in the classroom. The remembering Shady Sands chalkboard shows how this is the scene I was talking about in the last episode where it shows how developed things. They had trolleys. They repurposed government buildings.
Yep.
We get that little timeline, the fall of Shady Sands, 2277. And then the bomb, which a lot of people got up in arms about. They're like, OK, does the date match the bomb? I'm not going to spend time on that on this episode. I've talked about that a little bit in the past. Shows sometimes mess up timelines or dates and things, and I don't think that's a big issue, but I also think that this can be interpreted in a way where it's not messed up, and whichever direction the show wants to go with it really isn't a big deal to me.
Fair.
Then we have the NCR flag, we have the New Vegas music that pops up, we have the Join the NCR poster. Then really this plays back to that previous scene where she's talking to Maximus and she's like, what happened in the last 200 years? She's starting to fill in the gaps through this classroom. And the thing that occurred to me about the scenes that we've been seeing with them in this vault is that not only is Maximus getting what he was looking for, he's getting comfort and safety. Mm-hmm. She's getting what she was looking for, information about what happened to the world.
Yeah. She wants to know the why. Yep.
Yep. This is supplying that to both of them, which again is very poetic. They're on the same path. They have different goals, but they're getting the same like story mm-hmm. beats in order. Which is really smart when you think about laying out a show. Then we go back to the ghoul. The government, the Rangers take him to the government, which is, of course, misspelled. This is Sorrel Booker. The ghoul knows him. He's basically acting like a mob boss. He calls himself the president of the government, but he's really just a mob boss. Some of the funny things here. Used to be a bounty hunter, best bounty hunter to shoot a man in the ass is one of the lines about the ghoul. During the scene, he sews his finger back on and it works because he's a ghoul.
Mm-hmm. He's a ghoul. Exactly.
Yeah, sure. And then this is he says here, maybe you're still looking for her, the daughter, the wife, both. Mm-hmm. Don't know.
We don't know. But exactly.
He knows more about Cooper than we do. He brings up Moldaver, calls her the Flame Mother, says that she's dangerous. Her picture is on the board. She's one of the wanted people on the board. He talks about the Super Duper Mart was under our protection. This is where it's like, okay, well, they're clearly just like the mob under their protection.
Right.
Their mob. This is not a government. This is a mob system. And then, of course, like the ghoul plays all of them in this scene, right? This is basically the line is feed him to the hogs. And then he takes the gun, and he shoots them, and they have this conversation about, you know, what's going on in the scene and all that. The question here is, why does this guy want Moldaver? Why is she on the board? And I think the answer to that is she's on every board. She's every bounty system.
That's what I was about to say.
At all.
Exactly.
It's not specific to
the real reason.
Right. It's not specific to this guy. And then there's this, Cooper says something like, well, I know her, but she looked different, which implies pre-war stuff, which we'll get to.
Yeah. So This scene is interesting. This actually reminds me of Junktown in Fallout 1 a lot, where you have this, because it's the same thing. I'm actually looking it up right now, the guy's name. But when you go to Junktown, you then are able to help out Killian in killing the casino of Gizmo. That's his name.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So it
Yeah. Yeah.
reminds me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This reminds me. It's not quite the same, but it reminds me of Gizmo. Is a closer one. And then there was another one, or you could be one of the even one of the bosses in New Reno. It also lines up there pretty well.
Yeah, the way that
So.
these I mean, they're not even petty kingdoms. They're
Yeah. Little town.
little
Yeah.
towns that are run by terrible people who treat everybody horribly, and they're basically our mob bosses, right? All right, so then Cooper goes to the funeral to home to meet his friend, right? This is where he meets back with his friend again, and we get this kind of intercutting two scenes back and forth. And then Lucy goes to the Vault 4 ceremony. Notice that these are both ceremonies or places that have something to do with the dead. So you've got another parallel here between those two. They are both in those scenes realizing things they didn't expect and remembering the past or bringing back the past. There's past, the dead, places of respect for the dead, that kind of stuff, right? And of course, you have the scene where everyone takes off their clothes. They remember the Flame Mother. So now we know Moldaver's connected to this group. They're from the surface, Shady Sands. We put the connection together. She had something to do with Shady Sands. Then I have this written down. We bring back those taken from us by covering us in their ashes. The entire, and I think this means something. The entire world is built on the ashes of the past. The whole world burned. The whole world is covered in the ashes of the past. So it would make sense to develop a system of worship and memory of the things that you care about by covering yourself in those ashes.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that, but I like your own. I like that. That's a very good take there. Yeah, because it's obvious that they're celebrating. I viewed it the one in Vault 4 as them celebrating their save her saving them. And they call her the Flame Mother, so
Yes.
she saved them from something.
Right. And
And you
they
know,
to the level that they worship her,
yes.
which is considerable. I mean, that is noteworthy. But now that we know that she came from the past and she survived into this time period, that would also make her kind of a mythic figure if they know she's been around that long. Or
Well, there's a lot
that
of questions about, of course, how she's been around that
how.
long.
But imagine you live in the wasteland 200 years after the bombs drop, and you meet somebody who can tell you without any doubt that they were around before the Great War. They clearly know more about the way the world works, history, science, medicine, whatever. You would think that person is supernatural in some way, or at least worth respecting with a very strong sense of like, okay, well, you clearly are, shoulders above any of us. So maybe you should be the leader, you know? So all of that starts to kind of come together, I think.
Yeah, I think this scene's again more setting up Moldiver more than anything else. It sets piece of all right, this is now we now know because I mean, candidly, we're in episode 6, so we have 2 episodes left. We now know who the culminating figure is going to be in episode 8, or do we? You know, it's good writing. It's driving you towards, okay, this person has a deep secret. There's something else there. The ghoul knows her. You know, she's Vault 4. She now becomes this like linchpin to the story, for lack of a better phrase.
And the scene where she's meeting with Cooper in the past really shows us that she's anti-Vault Tech. She's anti-government. She is on the other side of the fence, which should make us think well of her, because at this point we're very suspicious of Vault Tech, but we also already think she's a terrible person because we saw what she did to Vault 33. So it puts us in this weird bind where we're like, is she a good guy now? Wait, how does that make any sense? Which is a wonderful dilemma to be in as a viewer. And then Lucy goes back to Max. He doesn't want to leave. There's a song playing, I'm Tickled Pink by Jack Shandland. And it just reinforces the fact that like he is super comfy, doesn't want to leave. He's in that
This is
robe.
the best moment of his life. I mean, that's the thing.
Yes. And so Lucy decides that she's going to prove that something weird is going on. She goes up to Vault 12. We have the whole scene with like the gulper body, the pregnant woman, the video, the yep. baby gulpers coming out and eating her, which of course is horrifying. The other women in the pods, I don't know why they don't just give them clothing, but maybe they don't have clothing for women in pods. I don't know. And then the scientist arrives. We get the scene with a harpoon gun, which is fun because harpoon yes. guns are in Fallout. And then Lucy says, your entire culture is insane. I'm sure if we came to your home, we'd say the same, is the response to her.
Yes.
Which is so true, because if the people exactly. from Vault went to 33, they'd be like, you guys are weirdos. What is going on here?
Well, and that what makes this scene so great is that for those of us who know Fallout, if you're watching this, then you realize, oh, Vault 4 was one of the experimenting vaults. It's yes. obvious. This explains all the. This is how we explain all the people there. The you know Chris Parnell with the one eye, the people with the glowing eyes, the people with the scales, all that stuff. Oh, they were doing genetic modification.
Yeah,
that's what Fallout 4 is. It's and like one of the more extreme, more evil ones of the vaults, because yes. there are tiers to vaults. There's good ones, not many, a lot of not great ones, and then there's some real bad ones.
Yes,
and Vault 4 was a real bad one.
Yeah, yeah. So and that's where this episode ends. So yeah, it's going back through it again, it shows me how much care they put into the script. And like you said, yeah. there are some moments that don't play as well. There are some moments that make you go yeah. okay, does that make sense for this character? But by and large, those scenes are and lines of dialogue or whatever are minimal compared to the moments that just feel expertly crafted and put together. Right. So it's building this, I don't know. I already liked the show. It's making me like it even more.
Yes.
So any last thoughts from you before we wrap this one up?
Yeah, I think we're getting to the really good part of the show now. Now we're getting into the culmination. Let's really break through and show everyone this is what Fallout is about. This is the story that we're going to get into. And we're starting to see, even for me as a Fallout fan, I like getting a lot of the Vault Tech background, which we're about to get a lot more of.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Very true. Well, John, thank you for joining me again. I look forward to wrapping up the next two episodes
yep.
in the future. And thank you listeners for tuning in. I'm going to take a quick break and then go thank our patrons and do some other stuff. So I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Thanks again to John for joining me on this episode. He'll be back next time for episode 7 and then also episode 8 as we wrap up season 1. And if you haven't checked out his 40K Lorecast and you are a fan of Warhammer or just curious about Warhammer 40K, go check it out. It's a great show. They explain all the deep lore and all the intricacies of the books and the games and all that kind of stuff. It's awesome stuff. But before I go, I have to thank all of our patrons. Thank you so much for your support. Patreon.com/FalloutLorecast. Thanks for being here. And big shout out to our Sentry bots, Germinator, Dusty Ray, and Ira M. Thank you so much. Also, we got two new reviews on Apple Podcasts here in the US. So if you'd like to help me out, leave a 5-star review. I'll read it out on a future episode, like this one from GamerPug888, who says, not enough stars in the world for this show. The host, Tom or Robots, is so nice and calming. I will listen to you on my way to sleep and on my way to school. You are my first of 3 of lore podcasts, and I can't give you enough credit or support to make up for how good this is sincerely. Thank you, GamerPug. That's awesome. And then this one from Lieutenant Alpha FF says, Robot props. Tom/Robots is the bomb. I am only at episode 223, but Tom's Fallout lore deep dives and patron chats are overall provision of a well-put-together Fallout podcast has killed it. I started a year-long basement renovation that took away from Fallout gaming setup, and his podcast across his entire network has scratched my missing gamer itch. Well, thank you so much, Alpha. I couldn't do this without all of your support, so thank you for being here, and I will see you on the next episode. Stay safe in the wasteland. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people, on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.